Welcome, and thank you for joining the National Multiple Sclerosis Society's MS Learn Online Internet Program. I'm Rick Turner, your host and medical correspondent. Although there is still no cure for MS, there are various strategies available to modify the disease course, treat exacerbations, manage the symptoms, and improve function and safety. In combination, these treatments enhance the quality of life for people living with MS. To help us better understand treatments that can modify the disease course is Dr. James Bowen. Dr. Bowen is the medical director for the MS Center at Evergreen Healthcare in Kirkland, Washington. Welcome to the program, Dr. Bowen.
Thank you. I'm glad to join you.
Well, today's segment is titled MS Treatment Options, Managing Your Decision. So let's start with an obvious first question. What are some of the considerations that people should think about when deciding what type of disease-modifying agent they should use? Where should they start?
I think the first step is to make a commitment to actually doing one of the disease-modifying therapies. It's often worthwhile for patients to put in some time and effort up front making this decision and feeling comfortable about it, because this is a long-term commitment that they're going to have to live with for quite some time. Some of the issues that they have to think about, patients are often worried about the side effects that the drugs might cause. They also have a fear of injection because all of these medicines are given by injection to date. They also have questions about the effectiveness of the medicines. However, I suspect that the biggest issue that they have to deal with is that they have to commit to doing it, and often it takes a little bit of time for them to get in the right frame of mind to make such a long-term commitment. These medicines are challenging to use because they do not improve patient symptoms. They are like an insurance for problems down the road. So you're doing daily injections or every other day injections or once a week injections with the plan that this is going to decrease problems in the future. It really takes a lot of commitment to do that, and patients have to really think that through up front.
And in terms of those decisions you just talked about that have to be confronted, what about lifestyle issues? Does it matter, say, whether you travel a lot, something like that, in terms of which therapy you're going to choose?
So these therapies each have several nuances that often lead a patient to pick one of these drugs over another. One of them is the frequency that the injections are done. So, for example, Avonex is once a week, Betaseron is every other day, Rebif is three times a week, and Copaxone is daily. So for some people, it's more convenient to do the once a week if they're traveling. For others, they prefer getting into a routine with everyday injections. Another issue is the side effects, and the three interferons, that would be Avonex, Betaseron, or Rebif, all have flu-like side effects. So one has to balance the flu-like side effects of those injections with Copaxone, which does not have flu-like side effects, but Copaxone also has daily injections. Also, there is some issues with whether the drug is mixed or not. So most of these drugs come in pre-filled syringes that one does not need to mix. Betaseron, you have to mix it up at the time you use the dose. What you get in return for the mixing of the Betaseron is that the pH is near normal, so the medicine doesn't sting quite as much when it's injected. So all of these factors have to be considered by the patient, as well as insurance coverage for them. And all of these have to be considered in making a final decision about which drug might be the best one for them.
Now, all of these disease-modifying agents have been shown to give favorable results. Yet despite that, there are people that choose not to use any disease-modifying agent. In your experience, Dr. Bowen, what are some of the reasons people have to not go on a treatment?
Well, I think the most common reason is that they're simply not psychologically ready for such a commitment. It's really a big commitment to say you're going to use these drugs on a regular basis, potentially for years. So it takes some people a lot of time to come to that position psychologically. some patients are in outright denial about whether they have MS or whether their MS is bad enough to warrant this. I think those of us in the medical field always worry about such patients because we are concerned that even though the patient may feel that they are doing well, they may be developing silent disease that may be creeping up on them. So most patients we would encourage to use these drugs if they're psychologically ready to do so.
And you mentioned that one of the factors in this decision that makes it difficult is that you're trying to prevent the disease from getting worse, not necessarily making it better. And we received an email from Patty, an MS Learn Online participant, who asks just about that issue. She says, how does a person know if the treatment they are taking is beneficial? In other words, how do they know that they're any better off taking the agent than not?
That's another difficult aspect of using these drugs because, as you said, they don't make the patient feel any better. They're really to prevent problems later and to prevent the number of attacks patients are having. There is no good way to tell if the drugs are working other than to simply follow the patient. So if patients are on these medicines and they're not having attacks, then we view that as evidence that the drug is working. If the patient is having attacks, then we have to make a judgment because, unfortunately, these medicines are not perfect and they do not completely eliminate the disease activity. So if patients still have a little disease activity, that's not surprising. So we have to make a judgment as to whether the attacks patients are having are more than would be expected. Another thing we often follow is MRI scans because we know that for every attack a patient has that they're aware of, by MRI there are approximately 10 silent attacks. So oftentimes the clinical picture and the MRI picture are both used to make a judgment as to whether the medicines are being effective.
And I know, Dr. Bowen, that these therapies tend not to work very quickly. You don't see results overnight. So time is a factor here. And given that, when, in your opinion, does it make sense to consider going off one treatment option and perhaps trying a second one?
So there are several reasons why a patient might switch to a different medicine, but one is side effects. And if a person has side effects that they just cannot deal with, then the switch can be made fairly early. Fortunately, we're able to get most patients tolerant to the side effects, and especially the interferons. If you start at a low dose, usually around a quarter of the normal dose, and taper up, that really helps. And also using analgesics like ibuprofen really helps. If the side effects are intolerable despite that, a patient can switch very quickly. If the reason for switching is because the medicine is not working, then usually you want to give it at least several months. And I think most people would say 6 to 12 months is a reasonable trial period for that. This is because it could take a couple of months or so for the medicine to kick in, if you would. And then you need time to see if there are additional attacks. And that usually takes several months because most patients have just one or two attacks per year. So really, for your average patient, they should think about a trial of one of these medicines lasting at least 6 to 12 months.
And beyond that, are these disease-modifying agents something that people with MS can expect to be on for the rest of their lives, or at least until something better comes along?
Yes, that's right. So when patients are on the medicines, it decreases the number of attacks that they would have. When they stop the medicine, they fairly quickly revert back to whatever their previous risk of MS attacks is going to be. So the intent is to use these drugs on a regular basis for years. Fortunately, there are a lot of medicines that are in studies right now that I think will replace our current group of medicines. So probably they're not looking at being on these for their entire life, but they are looking at being on one of the current medicines until something better comes along.
Dr. Bowen, in a couple of months, we're going to be talking specifically about progressive forms of MS. However, let's spend just a couple minutes discussing this today as well. What are the treatment options available for people with secondary progressive or primary progressive multiple sclerosis?
Those types of MS are very difficult to study, and as a result, we don't have a lot of data on them. So really, we don't know if the current drugs really work for those types of MS, though a lot of people assume that if they work for relapsing remitting MS, they likely work for progressive forms of MS as well. So the patients can actually use any of these drugs for progressive MS. They're doing so off-label, which means that the FDA has not actually approved them for that use. So they can use any drug that's on the market for that. The issue, again, is that we simply don't have very much data to support whether we have proven that it's helpful or not.
And why is that, in a nutshell, that we have so little data about progressive forms?
Well, progressive forms are difficult to study. So in relapsing remitting disease, we can count attacks as the outcome of our studies, but progressive forms of MS don't have very many attacks, so they're not as easy to count. We often have to resort to measuring disability instead, and our methods of measuring disability are quite crude, and as a result, it's very hard to measure the outcome of these studies. So a typical study for relapsing remitting MS might take about 300 to 400 patients, and a typical study for progressive forms of MS may take 900 to 1200 patients. So the cost and the length of time to do these studies is many, many times greater than it is for relapsing remitting studies. There was a recent study of primary progressive MS, where they had 900 patients enrolled in that study, and they followed them for 3 years, and 450 of those were on placebo, and at the end of 3 years, the placebo group had not changed based on our disability measure. So if the placebo group doesn't change, then you simply cannot measure the difference, and this is the reason why it's hard to study this disease, is we have a hard time measuring it.
Understood. Well, Dr. Bowen, thank you again very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
The National MS Society is proud to be a source of information for you about multiple sclerosis. Our comments are based on professional advice, published experience, and expert opinion, but do not represent individual therapeutic recommendation or prescription. For specific information and advice, consult a qualified physician. If you have a question that was not addressed, please email us at mslearnonline@nmss.org. If you'd like more information on multiple sclerosis, click on the resources link on your screen or call the chapter nearest you for an answer to your question. You can reach your chapter by calling 1-800-FIGHT-MS. That's 1-800-344-4867. You may also want to check the National MS Society's website, where you'll find more information about today's topic and a menu of other webcasts available to participate in. Funding for this program was provided as an unrestricted educational grant from these National MS Society chapters. Please join us for the next webcast when we'll discuss MS treatment options, making it work for you. For the National MS Society, I'm Rick Turner, wishing you health and happiness.